This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. Time to go on the money with Chris DeSimeo and Jim Miller, chairman of Bartlett & Company.
Stocks continued to grind higher last week as earnings reports kicked off last week, and they were generally better than expected. Even some of the banking issues, which reported yesterday and Thursday after the close, came in a little better than expected, and some of the materials companies. So all in all, a fairly reasonable start to the brand new year 2013. And to help us digest all the goings on Wall Street and on Main Street, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Mr. Jim Miller, the chairman of Bartlett Investment Advisors here in Cincinnati. There'll be a link to the Bartlett website from the WVXU.org website. Jim is a longtime fixture here in the investment community in southwestern Ohio, from the Dayton, Ohio area originally, a graduate of the University of Michigan and an MBA from Harvard, well-known throughout the community for his many charitable tendencies also. Jim, thanks so much for taking part of your weekend to be here.
Well, you're welcome, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. So, Jim, tell us, I mean, this, you know, a couple weeks ago, people were ready to just throw themselves over the cliff because they either were scared to death by all the demonizing of people about, one side says this, one side says that, we're going over the fiscal cliff, earnings are lousy, Europe's falling apart. If we were just sitting here right now with a pitcher of beer, even though it's a little early for that, but, if we were, before we started having the pitcher of beer, what would you tell an average person in terms of how they should be looking at their portfolio as the year 2013 unfolds?
The only really reliable way to approach this is just look at valuations of securities.
You mean like facts?
Yes, just what the current earnings are. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel safe about the earnings base of the economy, ultimately the economy is cyclical and ultimately it comes back. But you have to look at what multiple of earnings you're paying for a stock versus the interest yield that you can get on a bond.
So you're comparing then a company. You're looking at a company. You're saying, okay, I'm paying X amount of dollars for this earnings stream and comparing it with what it's available in the credit markets.
Correct. For instance, a 10-year treasury is yielding 1.6%. It actually hit a low in the beginning of last year of 1.3%, a 200-year low, as a matter of fact. But you compare 1.6% versus, say, if a stock is trading for 10 times earnings, that's an earnings yield of 10%.
Right.
P.E. multiple of 10. If you take the reciprocal, that's the earnings yield.
You studied a lot of math at University of Michigan. So back then, 10 was bigger than 1.6.
Hasn't changed.
Not even new math.
But right now, you're looking at a market that's trading for about 12 times earnings. Okay. So 1/12 is about an 8.5% yield.
Earnings yield. So yeah, you just divide then by that 12, and that becomes like the flip side of 8.5. But what would you say to people, Jim, who would counter with yes, but aren't earnings growth is going to slow down and perhaps even earnings this year might be less than last year? Is that still a risk?
Well, that's probably embedded in the price of the stock. That's why the price earnings multiple is low. Historically, the price earnings multiple in the market's been 16.5.
Okay.
But then just look at the alternatives. Why would someone buy a bond yielding 1.6% at present, especially a taxable bond? But the 1.6% won't even beat the rate of inflation at present.
Have any themes emerged from your firms? You have a lot of you yourself are a chartered financial analyst. You have a lot of CFAs on staff there at Bartlett. Have any themes emerged from this, at least fixing the first part of the fiscal cliff, that you believe have staying power for investors?
Well, if you look at a chart, a lot of people look at a chart, what the market has done, say, since the year 2000, and there were peaks. They look and see three peaks. A market technician would say, look, we're at another peak now.
A triple top, so to speak.
Triple top, a very dangerous sort of thing. If you just look at it, you say, well, the next move is going to be down.
Sure. The first peak was March of 2000. The second peak then, ironically, I mean, I don't know why I have these numbers memorized, but the market bottomed out on October 9th. 2002, which John Lennon's birthday is October 9th. That's how you remember that kind of stuff. And then 5 years to the day, October 9th, 2007, in hindsight, was the prior market peak. So now here we are, 5 years it got back. And then the third peak is kind of where we are now then.
Yes, but what people ought to do is look at what the price earnings multiple was in the year 2000. February 2000, the market was 34 times earnings. And incidentally, 34% of the market capitalization happened to be invested in
technology
stocks that were trading for 34 times earnings. Some of them were trading for an infinite multiple of earnings because they had...
They were all P and no E.
So you had 34 times earnings then. And then they peak in 2007, which essentially was at the height of the housing bubble. That was in the low 20s, 23 times earnings. And
so we were at 34, then 23, and now we're at
12.
12, hike.
12 times earnings.
Yeah.
So the market is, don't be mesmerized by technical factors and see a triple peak. This market is cheap by almost any metric, earnings or dividends. And then just look at the alternatives. You know, getting a 1.6% isn't really compelling on a bond. That's not a safe haven.
Especially if your costs are likely to go up, and especially if interest rates are likely to go up. You and your firm have paid a lot of attention over the years, managing a lot of credit assets, to what the Federal Reserve may or may not do. This week we got a new Treasury, at least a new Treasury Secretary announcement. I can't wait to see if he's appointed. The signature on the dollar may look very interesting, perhaps collectible for a while. But what do you see happening then in the credit markets? If bonds are not a great place to put a lot of money because they may lose value if rates go higher, what should income-starved or income-seeking investors do?
Again, look at common stocks. There are a number of common stocks that have very high dividend yields. Procter & Gamble, for instance, is in excess of 3%. And they have a propensity to increase their dividend every year. This is there are a lot of stocks like that. It's not only that you don't even have to make a jump to price earnings multiples. Just take a look at what bonds are yielding versus what common stocks are paying out. Now, and then we do think that there's sanctity to a lot of the dividends that these companies have generated. They're flush with cash right now.
Mm-hmm.
What was frustrating, I think, with, say, the posture that the Federal Reserve had taken is that they're priming the money pump. There are a lot of dollars sloshing around out there, but we can't – the economy has no traction.
So it can't absorb them. It's like rainwater, you know, bouncing off concrete. Then
it's what was we called fiscal drag. There's a lot of money sloshing around, but there's no traction, and that a lot of that had to do with confidence in in government, for instance.
Yeah.
Whether Congress would get together and pass a bill that we could live with.
So here we sit on this Saturday morning on the southern edge of the Great Lakes region, former manufacturing center of the United States, got a reputation as being the Rust Belt, and yet recently there has been a resurgence in manufacturing. The Atlantic Monthly magazine's cover story recently was all about they call it the insourcing boom, about how manufacturing jobs are coming back to the United States. Yesterday on Morning Edition, there was a story about Ford hiring over 2,200 people in the United States. Apple is bringing manufacturing of the iMac back. Is this a trend that, again, might be of interest to investors looking to place some money for the long term, the resurgence of manufacturing in the United States?
Yeah, certainly technology. The technology is such that the United States isn't taking a back seat to anyone in that particular area. The other thing is population growth is very good in the United States. So I think the problem that China will ultimately have is that they'll have a very small working force versus what the population is, and that's what got Europe into trouble a long time ago.
And Japan.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, they've had this zero population growth or one-child policy, which I guess would lead to negative population growth over time. How long do you think it will take before that starts to weigh on their demographics?
Well, 30 years from now, the average age in China will be in excess of 40 years old. That's
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right. That is a problem. It used to be Robert Malthus, who was a demographer that lived between 1760 and 1840, contended that mankind will ultimately starve itself to death.
Yeah, he was not an optimist.
Not at all, because he'd run out of natural resources. But the truth of the matter is human beings are natural resources too. It's a factor in production, and having population is a very positive is something that would should be construed as positive. For instance, Latin America will have population growth. The birth control laws down there, there's really little in the way of birth control. They have other natural resources besides human beings. They have iron ore, oil,
copper.
A lot of arable land. So the emerging markets are probably, over an extended period of time, going to be the most attractive common stock play that one could have. One, these are countries that aren't debt-laden, so there'll be investors or corporations that are interested in investing there. Two, they're fledgling economies, so by definition, the growth rate will be higher. And then three, they'll ultimately have a consumer revolution. People, for instance, it might have been, I'm not being facetious or demeaning about this, but people that were buying, say, a water buffalo as family transportation 15 years ago in Cambodia, 10 years from now, they'll be buying cars. If you talk to someone who's been to China recently, they'll say, well, I was there 20 years ago, and we couldn't even drive in the streets. There were so many bicycles. Now there are cars all over the place. Mm-hmm. So the emerging markets will probably be very strong. But looking at the United States, I have natural gas, obviously.
In abundance.
Yeah, we have a lot of factors of production, including human beings, that are in abundant supply right now.
Well, if anything but a Malthusian look at the world from our good friend Mr. Jim Miller, the chairman of Bartlett Investment Advisors here in Cincinnati. The website, again, there will be a link to your website, which is just chock full of nuggets. And the fact that some of the charts that you referred to are there for display on the website. And Jim Miller from Bartlett, thank you so much for being with us this weekend.
You're welcome, Chris. Thanks for having me.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.